How about another nice hand for the North Shore Elementary School children from Jacksonville? One thing that on their own good time, for their own amusement, and maybe that's why they're so good at it. Thank you for coming out here today. We have a question here from one of the youngsters from the North Shore Elementary School. They would like to know when their performance here will be shown on television. And if somebody has that scheduling information, would they please slip down here to stage left and let us know. Now if somebody will bring me my guitar, I'll play a song. A lot of the fine old folk songs incorporate stories that come right in the middle of the songs. This is one of the first one that I ever heard. Let's drop the monitors, please, sir. Well, my name is Charlie Brenner. From Charleston I come. I've been this wide world over. Some ups and downs I've known. I've been this wide world over. Some ups and downs I've saw. But I never knew what misery was till I made old Arkansas. Friends, I got off the train in Little Rock, right dead in the middle of winter. No one dared extend to me his paw nor bid me welcome to the sovereign state of Arkansas. And it was mighty, mighty cold. So I dodged around the freight depot to dodge that blizzard wind. I met a walking skeleton. He said his name was Thomas Quinn. His hair hung down in rat tails on his lean and lantern jaw. And he invited me to his hotel. He said it was the best in Arkansas. That was way so I followed my conductor man to his respective place, where pity and privation were to be seen on every face. His bread it was corn dodger, and it's meat I could not chaw. And he charged me a half a dollar in the state of Arkansas. That was way, way too much, so I went out and got me a job on a farm. Farming. But I didn't much care for the work, nor the farmer, nor his wife, nor none of their children. So one day I went up to him, I said, "Mister, I'm gonna quit this job and you can just pay me all." He said, "All right, son, if that's the way you feel about it." So he took me out to the barn and he gave me a mink skin. I said, "Mister, I don't want this piece of flea-bitten animal hide. I want all the folding green I've got coming to me for the work I've been doing on your place." He said, "Son, you never got it straight yet, but mink skins is what us Arkansas folk use for currency." So I went on into town and hunted me up a restaurant, went in there, pitched my mink skin up on the counter, and the waitress slid a blue plate special right across the counter at me in a salt cellar. Then she picked up my mink skin right careful-like, looked it over once or twice, smoothed out the rough spots on the hide, put it down underneath the counter, and fetched me out 14 rabbit skins and 3 coon hides for change. So I'm going to the Indian Territory. Lord, I live outside the law. I bid farewell to the canebrakes in the state of Arkansas. If you ever see me back again, I'll extend to you my paw. But it'll be through a telescope from here to Arkansas. All right, ladies and gentlemen, how about a nice warm welcome for the lady who started it all, Miss Thelma Bolton, cousin Thelma to all of us, and she's going to end up this morning's program with a story.
I know lots of stories. I grew up in Florida, had my 3rd birthday in Gainesville, and I always like to tell everybody how old I am. I had my 80th birthday last August 31st, and I'll be 81 come in this August, and I'm proud of this, because I'm 20 years older than my mother when she died in 1936. And it was my mother and my dad who always encouraged me with my storytelling. Oh my goodness, the flags are just falling around here like leaves from a tree. Yeah, beautiful leaves. And I've loved collecting stories about Florida. And one of my most favorite legends, and you know what a legend is, it's a story that could be true. It's a maybe, maybe not. You know how that is? We tell some of those sometimes, don't we? Do you ever tell a prevarication when your mama asks you where you've been and you don't really want her to know that you've been wading in the branch and getting ground ditch? I used to do that. Get the ground ditch every summer. And oh boy, how it hurt. But anyway, this is a story about a big old hole in the ground over near Gainesville called the Devil's Millhopper. And it's a little state park now, but when we were growing up in Gainesville, it wasn't anything, but it was way out of town. It's in the city limits now. And it's a little state park, and it's beautiful. If you haven't been to the Devil's Millhopper, you must go. There are stairs down into it, kind of crooked around like this, and there are 220 steps to the bottom. I don't think I'm going down there anytime soon, but I used to slide down on my fanny. And we'd explore, and we knew that there were plants growing in the Devil's Millhopper that didn't grow anywhere else but right there. Very rare, beautiful plants. And fortunately, most of those rare plants are still there and still flourishing. Well, now, this is a story how the Devil's Millhopper came to be. And I've just seen this story written down on a piece of theme paper. I never have seen it printed in a book. But long, long time ago, old devil, the devil, who liked to, the devil liked to put on the form of mortal man and come up from Hades down way down below and march around, get into mischief, see what he could see, and see what kind of mischief he could get into. And one fine moonlight night, the devil put on the form of mortal man, very handsome man he was too. And he came up on top of the earth. Then he was walking around, you know, showing off how handsome he was. And he spied a beautiful Indian maiden sitting by a limpid stream like this beautiful Swanee that's flowing behind us. And he walked over to her and he tried to flirt with her. Well, that went over like a lead balloon because she already had a sweetheart. She was engaged to a handsome Indian brave. They were going to be married. So she spurned the devil. And oh, he was furious. He just stomped his way back down to Hades. And he sat down there by those eternal hot fires. And he plotted and he planned. He fussed and he fumed. And finally, on the dark of the moon, he hit upon a plan. And he came back to this surface of the earth, again putting on the form of mortal man. And the whole Indian village was fast asleep. They were all in their pretty chickies. And he stole into the one, because he was kind of magic, you know, so he knew exactly where she was sleeping. And he stole in there, and he grabbed her up, and he threw her over his shoulder and began to run just as fast as he could. Well, now you know what she did. She began to kick and holler and squall and bawl loud enough to wake up the dead. And she waked up all the people in her village. And they took after the devil and his beautiful burden. And the old devil was worried because he knew if they caught up with him, he had on the form of mortal man, he was mortal, and they could put an end to him forever. So quickly, he turned himself back into his natural form, and he stomped his foot, and lo, a great big hole opened up in the ground. Oh, it was a big hole. It was bigger than this park is here. And all her people who were running in hot pursuit were changed into stones all the way around. And of course, they were wringing their hands and crying, and the tears were flowing. And those tears continued to flow and make little streams all the way around. And they joined together in a big stream down in the bottom. And in the meantime, the devil, with his beautiful burden, had disappeared into a cave over in one side of the big old hole in the ground. And that lovely Indian maiden was lost forever. And if you go out to the devil's mill hopper today, you can still see and hear those little tricklets of water coming down the sides of the hopper. And if you listen, I think you can hear the moans, and maybe if you listen close enough, you might hear her cry, calling from down below. And that's how the devil's mill hopper came to be. And one more. We're going to let you go a little early. You can go down to the food shelter and get some victuals to eat. Go back to the Ukrainian group. They have some foods back there too. And a little boy. They're not selling any food. Ukrainian booth. Well, anyway, you can go see. And you can go down and see if anybody is really wrestling alligators in the Seminole Indian camp. Now, that camp is right across the road from the food booth, and you know that the food booth is down here. And I keep telling you, you ought to buy a program, because there's a map in that program that shows you exactly where everything is. And you want to get that firmly fixed in your mind. And the St. John's River group is on the old marble stage down there near the food. And oh, they'll have some glorious food down there for you. Hope you didn't all bring a picnic lunch. You can get just a snack, or you can get a whole lot more than a snack. Well, all right. To end with, little orphan Annie's come to our house to stay, to wash the cups and saucers up and brush the crumbs away, and shoo the chickens off the porch and dust the hearth and sweep, make the fire and bake the bread and earn her board and keep. And all us other children, when the supper things is done, we sets around the kitchen fire and has the mostest fun listening to the witch tales that Annie tells about and the goblins that get you if you don't watch out. One time there's a little boy that wouldn't say his prayers, and when he went to bed at night away upstairs, his mammy hit him holler and his daddy hit him bawl. And when they turned the kivers down, he wasn't there at all. They seeked him in the chimney flue, the cubby hole and press. They seeked him in the rafter room and everywhere, I guess. But all they ever found was just his pants and roundabout. The goblins will get you if you don't watch out. One time there was a little girl that would always laugh and grin and make fun of everyone and all her blood and kin. And once when they was company and old folks was there, she mocked them and she shocked them and she said she didn't care. And just as she kicked her heels and turned to run and hide, they was two great big black things a-standing by her side. And they snatched her through the ceiling before she knowed what they's about. And the goblins will get you if you don't watch out. Little orphan Annie says, when the blaze is blue and the lamp wick sputters and the wind goes ooh, and you hear the crickets quit and the moon is gray and the lightning bugs in dew is all squinched away, you'd better mind your parents and your teachers kind and dear, and cherish them that loves you, and dry the orphan's tear, and help the poor and needy ones that cluster's all about. The goblins will get you if you don't watch out. Thank you. Now, we'll begin again right at 1 o'clock. We believe in being on time. So you be back in your seat, and if the sun gets a little hot, you can push off in the shade, because thank goodness our sound is good. And you can hear everything. And I'm going to stay out here just a little bit. And if you want to ask me a question, you can come up and ask me. Until 1 o'clock then. Curly Deacle, are you up that hill? It's time for you to be down here. We need you. And by way of explanation, to move an alligator is not the easiest thing in the world. And I know some of you are going to be disappointed when it says on the program that there's going to be alligator wrestling, and there isn't any, but it's this lot of red tape. Have to get permits to move it, to bring it, and have to bring the fellow who's the expert wrestler along. And purportedly this here alligator is coming from the Big Cypress, and that's a long way from here. And it looks like we aren't going to have alligator wrestling today, so don't set your heart on that. Get that out of your head and enjoy what we do have. And it's fascinating up there in the Seminole Indian camp across from the old marble stage to see them. They are thatching the roofs. And thatching a roof, you don't have to know what you're doing to get those palmetto fronds laid on there right so that they're absolutely watertight and wind tight too. Because if you don't put them on there right, the wind could pick them up and just blow them away. And don't miss going down into the St. John's River area, which is on the old marble stage. That's where the early festivals were held. And boys and girls, they are making piñatas. And I don't know whether you know what a piñata is. Not go down there and find out. They're real interesting things. If you haven't been down there. And don't the crafts over here. Has everybody had some lunch? Yeah, I had a good sandwich and a great big old one. I don't know what kind they called it. And I had a little piece of pie and I had a good old Coca-Cola. You know the Coca-Cola rhyme? Coca-Cola went to town. Pepsi-Cola shot him down. Dr. Pepper fixed him up. Now they call him 7-Up. Curly, are you on your way? You coming? Okay. A lot of people don't know what a Florida cracker is. But you and I know we are Florida crackers. And we aren't called crackers from a biscuit. But we are crackers from the fact that the early Spanish and Seminole and Florida early settlers drove their cattle to market along pretty bad trails, and they had to have that great big old long whip and crack it over the heads of the cattle to keep them moving. Hence the term Florida cracker comes from the Florida cowboy. So now don't forget that. And we've got the best one in the United States, if not in the world. He's been part of this folk festival from the beginning. He used to be a carnival man. He asked me one time, he said, "Cousin Thelma, can I witness a little bit?" And I said, "You sure can." He said, "I used to work for the devil, but now I work for the Lord." Isn't that wonderful? Let's welcome J.P. Curly Deakle from McClenny. Clap him on the stage.
Okay.
Let's get it right out here. There you go.
Folks, the term Florida cracker dates way back, as Cousin Thelma mentioned a while ago, and I don't know of anybody old enough around here to remember it except Cousin Thelma. Now, that just goes way back. But anyway, when the cattle was first brought into this country, they were brought by the Spaniards on the second trip. That was 15 and 21. 15 and 21, the second trip the Spaniards made over here, they brought cattle with them. And the mosquitoes in Florida were so bad, they killed a lot of the cattle. And a lot of the Indian natives killed them to eat. And you couldn't blame them for that because we still eat them right on. But anyway, this is where the cattle industry sprang from. And back many, many years ago in the cattle industry of Florida, the settlers, when they began to move out and they would raise cattle, and they used to pin them up at night. They'd pin them up at night, and the ladies would milk the cows. And they, in these pens where we'd put them, sometimes there was a quarter of a mile from the house. And they used this to fertilize their crops with. Way back then, you couldn't buy commercial fertilizer. So they put a bunch of cows in this field and put a bunch of cows in that field overnight. And they'd turn it under and grow their crops in that manner. Well, the cowboys used whips similar to mine. A lot of people say bull whips, but I still say cow whips. My daddy said it was a cow whip. And to me, it's cow whip right on. But a lot of people call them bull whips. Now, when the fellows are driving the cattle, bringing them in the afternoon, the underbrush was in Florida was so thick, catclaw briars and palmettos and scrub oaks and everything else that you can mention, you couldn't see too far. You can take one of these whips and out on a still afternoon, I can pop that whip and you can hear it sometime a mile away. And so they could hear those fellas coming in driving the cattle. And they wouldn't say the cowboys are bringing the cows in. That was too long a term. And us Southerners so lazy, we had to cut that down, Cousin Thelma. See, so instead of the cowboys are bringing the cattle in to be milked, they just say, the crackers are coming. So that meant the cracker, they could hear the cracking of the whips, and they'd say, the crackers are coming. The ladies would get their milk pails and walk down sometime a quarter of a mile from the house to milk the cows and pin them up for the night. Next morning, do the same thing and turn them loose. But actually, that's where the term is, the Florida crackers, came from. So all of you, how many from Florida? How many from Florida? How about that? How many from Georgia? How many from Georgia? Well, they say Georgia crackers, too, because the same thing applied to Georgia as it did Florida. The first settlers were nationally in Florida, and they moved on. But the term is the cracker, whether you're from Georgia or Florida. If anybody calls you a cracker, thank you. Because it's just a heritage from way back. So I'm going to give you a little demonstration now of the cracking of the bullwhip. Now, an artist in the bullwhip, excuse me, I meant cow whips. See, you get sophisticated in this day and time, and you say bullwhip. So I make a mistake at one point. But I'm going to demonstrate the cow whips to you and show just how skillful a guy can get. And this goes back to biblical times. You're reading the Bible where it says 39 stripes, save one. The reason for that was, now I'm going to tell you all this before I get it, because you can't hear me when I get out here. The reason for that is, science tells us that after from 8 to 12 licks, severe licks on a person, the body goes into shock. A lot of people were beaten to death many years ago because they didn't show any signs of pain, and they'd beat them to death. But science tells us now that anywhere from 8 to 12 severe licks, the body goes into shock, and they don't really know what's happening to it. And that's what they say whenever, in biblical times, back in the Mosaic Law, it said 40 stripes save one. They had whips that they call cattails that had three thongs on the end of it. And they would braid bone into that, or they would braid metal into it. And when they would scourge somebody, like Christ was scourged for you and I, and I'm going to demonstrate that in a few minutes, but Christ was scourged for you and I, and the fellow that used the scourge was an artist in the whip dealing, just like I'm going to demonstrate here. And they would back just far enough off that those thongs, pieces of metal or bone, would just tear into the flesh, just enough to inflict pain. Now, where they get to 39, 40 stripes save one, you could only give them 13 licks. So that was 39 stripes on a person's body. So when I do this, remember, folks, Christ was scourged for you and I.